editorial representative from a paper or magazine, I don't remember, talking about the civil rights legislation as being a quarter bill. And they were going to town with that. Anyone in 1991 who's dumb enough and stupid enough to talk that kind of talk cannot, if they had any sense, be interested in seeing this country become a better country. By 1991, I would hope that we would have gotten beyond that, but we're not beyond it. Not beyond it in terms of the president saying he'll veto the bill if it passes because it's a quota bill. Not beyond it in terms of our own Senator Slade Gordon, who led the fight in the last Congress by one vote in order to kill the bill. The House had overridden the president's veto. The Senate could have had Slade Gordon voted the other way. And I think it's unfortunate that he's our senator thinking and acting the way he's thinking and acting. But the other side of the mountain is Jesse Jackson says that ought to be the climate of affirmative action and equal opportunity. And he says, and I agree with him 300%, that blacks must make a superior effort. And until we do that, and unless we do that, we will always be in trouble. In my mind, blacks making a superior effort means that all of us who can help others who are less fortunate ought to be about helping them in terms of staying in school, in terms of being decent students, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I see too many African Americans who've been helped by the Urban League, who've been helped by the NAACP, who've been helped by the civil rights movement, but they've kind of forgotten that help, and they've moved out to Gig Harbor, to Lakewood, or wherever, and they deserve a decent life, but they ought to set aside a piece of their time, a piece of their money, to help those who need help. So the problem is twofold: racism on the one hand, and not enough of us doing enough for us. As Jesse said, nobody can save us from us, for us, but us. And I truly believe that.
That's very well said. There was a recent, this is just in closing, something I have a personal interest in. There was a recent Supreme Court ruling that really touched me personally, the use of subversive force on an individual when you're trying to arrest them, using, am I phrasing this right? The one we discussed.
Isn't that Rodney King in Los Angeles?
Well, no. The right to use some type of force to get.
Oh, coerced confessions, yeah, overturning the Miranda decision.
Mm-hmm. What type of impact do you see that particular ruling having on in the Afro-American community?
Well, as I and I saw it on TV, maybe it was Sunday night, Attorney General Thornburg, I think he's bad news. Example, after the L.A. police situation with Mr. King, clearly wrong, clearly illegal, clearly immoral. The Justice Department said it was going to investigate the many complaints relative to police brutality that it has received, and there are thousands from what I gather. But from what the Attorney General is saying, there won't be any real investigation. And even he and President Bush have kind of complimented Mr. What's his name, the chief of police?
Gates.
Kind of saying, encouraging him to stay with it, that he'll make it and he's been a fine police chief. Well, as long as we got the chief law enforcement representative, the Attorney General of the United States of America, talking and acting like that, all of these rulings will negatively impact African Americans and people who get into trouble with the law. My advice to them superior effort, black community, is to stay the hell out of the reach of the law. If they made a special effort, and this would take a special effort, a lot of us could behave in a fashion that the law doesn't get the opportunity to harass us. I know that sometimes innocent people get caught. But we need to do more of counseling us to walk the chalk line, given what America is all about.
Personally, I feel because of the existing racism, level of racism in this country, and the economic position of most blacks in this country, I think that possibility of staying on one side of the law, away from the law, are somewhat slim for most of us. Unfortunately, I think police forces across America, most of them are predominantly white, and there's a power thing there. And there, again, because of economics, a lot of our young blacks and older blacks too choose to do illegal things to make incomes meet. And because of existing racism, I think that possibility of just staying away completely on the other side of the law for most of us is just unlikely.
I hear what you're saying, but from my point of view, and maybe I'm asking too much, I think we as an African-American community would be better off if more of us assisted each other to stay out of the track of the law, because the law ain't the law, it's not going to be the law, and I want no part of it to the extent that I can stay away from it. Realizing at the same time that I'm an African American and I can get caught up in it. I'm crucially aware of that.
How do you feel about the idea of a proposal of blacks not being, of American citizens not having to be a registered voter to participate in the juries throughout America? What do you think about that? What do you think about the state ID card and state driver's license serving as a official documents and qualifying an individual to serve on a jury and maybe to even vote, to go to the polls and vote. What do you feel about that?
When did the Swanigan case take place? Denise Swanigan last summer, mm-hmm. The young teenager who was shot mm-hmm. in the Hilltop area, all white jury, mm-hmm. Acquitted the man who shot her. One of the jurors made a comment to the effect that he was afraid for his life and she couldn't blame him, as he had no way of knowing who was a part of the gang, meaning that, hey, if you live in that area and something's going on in terms of a gang and you're black, you're guilty. Mm-hmm. Hogwash, I think. Mm-hmm. Any alternative that will get more blacks on the rolls through your driver's license or through a registration card, the urban leg Thomas Dixon would support. There's no way that justice was just. Now the urban leg and the black collective have petitioned the Justice Department through Congressman McDermott, who wrote a letter, through Congressman Dix, who wrote a letter, no response, asking the U.S. Justice Department to intervene in this case to ascertain whether or not Denise Swanigan's civil rights were violated. I think they were violated. Again, I would say to the extent that the churches, that the organizations such as the Urban League can guide blacks away from law enforcement connections, confrontations, or interventions to the extent that we'll be better off. And I realize that you're correct, given our plight in terms of economics, given our plight in terms of being outside of the American system, in terms of the majority of blacks outside. That's an impossible dream that I have. I'm stuck to that dream.
I wouldn't say it's so impossible as improbable. But with Mr. Dixon, do you just, in closing on the statement we just made, do you just feel as I feel that it's impossible for a black person in Tacoma or anywhere in America to receive justice in the justice system when the Constitution openly guarantees jury by your peers, and most, if not all, of the juries sometimes are all white or predominantly white? Do you see that as being one of the major factors in preventing black people from getting the true meaning of justice inside the judiciary system?
In my pocket, I have a little note, and I'll just give you some figures off the top of my head. I think it's between 1974 and 79. The Georgia branch of the NAACP did an assessment of the death penalty in Georgia. And my little note in my pocket indicates that in Georgia during those years, when blacks murder blacks, 2% of them go to the electric chair. When blacks, when whites murder blacks, I think it's 4 or 5% of them go to the electric chair. When whites murder whites, maybe 10% go to the electric chair. When blacks murder whites in Georgia during those years, 18% of them went to the electric chair. The NAACP, through the legal process, went all the way to the Supreme Court, who in 1979 ruled that there was no cause to believe that in this case in Georgia African Americans had been discriminated against. So I agree with you, there is no justice in America, and I don't see it coming tomorrow, given the makeup of the Supreme Court, given the makeup of who's in the office of the President of the United States.
And I keep saying one last issue, but this will be the last issue. About 2 months ago, there was an article that came out in Seattle Times that noted the high mortality rate among black infants in the country and gave Seattle the unfortunate distinction of being number one as far as the high mortality rate among young black infants. But the figure was overwhelming. Do you remember what that figure was? It was overwhelming, almost close to 50%. It was overwhelming.
Well, I have some information on it. There was an infant mortality task force appointed in Tacoma through the medical providers, and I was asked to serve on it about 2 years ago. The facts in Seattle are that per 1,000 deaths among infants, the average death rate is, I think, is 12.5 per 1,000 among Caucasians in Seattle. Among African Americans in Seattle, I think it's 28 out of every 1,000. In Tacoma, the data are about the same. I think it's about 12 per 1,000, a little higher than Seattle for whites. It's about 25 per 1,000 for blacks, not quite as bad. That's true all over America. As a result of our economic status, our being too often outside of the health care system. So it goes and it goes and it goes.
Okay, is there anything else you wanted to ask him? And okay, is there
I just wonder if you have a long-term sense of what the alternatives are or where we're going, or is that too hard to predict?
Well, I'll try to do that in 2 or 3 minutes. In spite of all these negatives that we've talked about over the last 10 or 15 or 20 minutes, if you look on the other side of the mountain, in 1965, blacks made up fewer than 1,000, I think 400 or 500 elected officials. In 1991, we were somewhere in the neighborhood of 8,000 elected officials, with blacks being the mayors of most of our largest cities. And throughout the states, throughout the localities, in large numbers of blacks and women are being elected to office. And Urban Lega, Ron Brown, is the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Now, Jesse Jackson and I would say that Ron is, and the committee are not going in the direction that they ought to go, but he's the first African-American in the history of this country who could ascend to that level. There are many positives. They're just not often enough, not quick enough, not fast enough. We just need to turn up the afterburners and push harder. We need a Martin Luther King again, somebody to rally us, to organize us, so that we can go back to the bread and butter of making things happen in America. If 2 million blacks descend on the capital of the United States of America and stay there until X conditions are met, some action will happen. And until we come to the point where we're ready to do that again, we're going to be where we are.
You don't see that happening without one leader, one central leader? You don't see another possible way that that could happen, feasible way?
Well, we got the leaders. We got Jesse Jackson. We got John Jacob, the president of the National Urban League. We got Benjamin Hooks, the executive director of the NAACP. You got Lyle Quarsam, the director of Safe Streets. You got Thomas Dixon. Any of us could be the leader if the people were willing to follow. I think we're too scattered. Some of us think we're too confident. None of us are Martin Luther King. We'll never be, but they are adequate leaders in America who can get the job done if we had the will to get the job done and if we were ready to sacrifice to the extent of getting the job done.
Okay, is there anything else, Mike, you want to address?
No, that's great. I think that one thing, you know, interesting what you're saying here at the end is when Dr. King died, that's exactly what he was talking about, the Poor People's Campaign and bringing together everybody in a big coalition to reverse the priorities. And that's the same agenda you're speaking
same
of.
Same agenda. And we're worse off now than we were when he was organized the Poor People's Campaign in 1968. We had more momentum, more support then, much more than we have now.
I wonder if, real briefly, but I wonder if you would have any comment about what the University of Washington branch campus can do to help this process in this community.
Well, Urban League can be better, University of Washington Tacoma campus can be better, but from what I see, you're on a good track here. Just more of what you're doing to surface issues that are important.
Well, thank you, Mr. Dixon.
Thank you.
Maybe-